We're all children of a special treat, a miracle of nature that we just call wheat. A crop that's in the Bible, a crop that's in our bread, a crop that's filled our bellies and held us in good stead. Through a history of starvation and times of want and woe, wheat has been our savior, our grub, our goulash dough. There's always lots of problems when we have enough to eat, but there's only one dilemma when there's not enough wheat. We feed you.
Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 32 of Wheat All About It, or what I'm calling The Cat That Came Back. About Kat Salois, Director of Research and Technology for the McGregor Company, for a bit more than 2 years now. Salois is confident and engaging, another one of those young people who learned their poise and speaking skills through FFA. I wanted to talk to Salois about her experience, but also about the McGregor Company's first foray into putting their name behind a variety. The variety, M-Press, that's M-Press, is licensed from a company who shall not be named. The secrecy was part of the licensing deal that McGregor has with the company, and I'll get to that in a moment. But first, I wanted to get to know Salois. Although she wasn't born in Eastern Washington, her pedigree is excellent. She is the progeny of two Eastern Washington parents who met while attending WSU, and both of them grew up with farming in their background. Salois herself was born in Oregon because her father got an ag teaching job there. He later received his PhD from Oregon State University and taught at North Dakota State University until he got the call from his Cougar alma mater to return to Pullman. Salois entered Pullman High School as a junior. She went on to receive her undergraduate degree at WSU in crop science, genetics, and biotech. I ask why she didn't follow in her father's footsteps and become an ag educator.
The second summer we lived here, I took a job on a local farm. So I work for Davis Farms. That's Gerald Davis. And he had the house on the hill in between Colfax and Pullman. At that time, he was working with Dr. Kim Kidwell, who was the spring wheat breeder, and had a plot right there on the Albion Road in 195. And because of that plot, I got to meet Kim Kidwell. And I thought her job was pretty much the coolest thing I have ever heard of. A wheat breeder, making transgenic food. At that time, Roundup Ready wheat was a thing. I was completely fascinated by it. So actually went to Wazoo to work with her and at the time Dr. Steve Ulrich, who was the barley breeder. And they really got me on my path. I was involved in plant breeding all the way through college.
Salois received her master's degree from Montana State University in plant sciences and was recruited by DuPont Pioneer to move to the Midwest and become a soybean breeder. She has about 10 soybean varieties to her credit. Although DuPont Pioneer doesn't disperse royalties to breeders, Salois got an education in high-throughput research.
Part of DuPont Pioneer is it is such a machine. And it's a massive undertaking, the amount of research and financing and people that are in their R&D programs. It is kind of factory-based research, so you really have to get motivated by how many lines you can crank through your system, how fast you can do it, can you do it better than your neighbor, that kind of thing. But having that resource, horsepower, seeing the fruits of your labor crank through the system so fast is pretty interesting.
I've interviewed plenty of public breeders about why they choose that particular career path, and what they say makes sense for them. And when I asked Salois why she had charted a life for herself outside the hallowed halls of academia, it also made sense for her.
Everybody is motivated by different things. They find different passions in life. Seeing the public side of the breeding programs, or I guess more of the public research, it's pure research. And what I mean by that is it's fundamental. They're on the cutting edge of discovery. I find it maybe more interesting on taking that cutting edge discovery and making it applicable to the end user. And I think there's totally options for both of those things in the research world. But I've just found it, for me, a bit more fulfilling to be closer to that end user and really help understand how we can take fundamental new discoveries and make them profitable on a farm.
So academia is not in your future?
Not at all.
How does the culture between McGregor's, which is a large company in eastern Washington and the Pacific Northwest, differ from a company like DuPont, which is a large company in the world?
Right. And they have very different objectives as well. And that's taken me a little bit to get used to, I'm not going to lie. So DuPont Pioneer is a publicly traded company, and their goals, first and foremost, are to satisfy shareholder expectations. And that is a very different dichotomy when stepping into a private, family-owned company that you could argue maybe doesn't have, will do things because of the greater good over business bottom line. And that is especially coming from private industry. When that happens, I just sit back and am kind of in awe that that's the way the business model has worked for so long. That, I mean, everybody has heard Alex McGregor talk about the need for farm families and advocating for farm families, and that is 100% how he is all the time. Like, he always has that kind of greater good in his mind when he's making decisions and direction.
Isn't it nice to hear an employee talk about a company in such glowing terms? Based on my interactions with Alex McGregor when I was a reporter for the Capital Press, he pretty much lives up to Solois's billing. I talked to McGregor a lot during his tenure as president of the Washington Association of Wheat Growers in the 1998 timeframe, which coincided with a major push to prohibit wheat stubble burning. Eventually, a negotiated settlement was reached that preserved burning as a tool, but until then, it was a fraught time for agriculture. Environmentalists portrayed farmers who burned as cruel and unfeeling about their smoke. Lines in the sand were drawn. Tempers flared. Throughout the unpleasantness of the era, as emotions popped off on both sides, I could always count on Alex McGregor to be the voice of reason, both because of what he said and the fact that he said it in his deep, resonating voice. Those of you who have listened to him know what I'm talking about. But I digress. As I said earlier, I was intrigued by the McGregor Company's announcement that it was licensing a variety from another company to release under their own name. Solois explained that while the concept is just getting off the ground in the Pacific Northwest, licensing varieties with narrow footprints to niche dealers is widespread in corn and soybean country. While Solois said a company like Monsanto has two big brands, DeKalb and Asgro, genetics the company has developed actually wind up in a myriad of different branded bags across the Midwest, with the difference based on coverage.
Usually the branded bag would have a very wide footprint, and the licensed variety would have a narrower footprint. So a company that could handle placing a variety very well into, say, Ohio, but not across the entire Midwest. And we're seeing the same exact thing happen in wheat. So Impress, which is the variety that McGregor's has licensed, is a great example of that, that we have a variety testing program that I administer with the research at McGregor's. It is very specific to our seed company, Tomco Seed. So what I mean by that is that variety testing is done in their footprint. Impress performed incredibly well in their footprint, but not necessarily across the entire PNW. The brand needs it to perform across the entire PNW and doesn't like to carry sub-regional products. Having a retailer with that sub-region as our whole world, it fits very well. So I think we'll see that model, and I guess there's no think because it's already happening, the model from the Midwest where companies are spending a lot of money in their R&D programs and looking for ways to get their genetics on more acres, taking opportunities for retailers or co-ops to be able to co-brand their varieties and get them placed onto the acre that they perform the absolute best on.
Is this a Midwest variety that was brought out here, or is this a Northwest variety?
It is born and bred PNW.
But there is confidentiality involved that you are not releasing the name of the company who actually developed the wheat, correct?
Correct. At this time, we can't state the supplier's name or the pedigree of that particular variety, but it was developed exclusively in the P&W.
Fascinating. Tell me, what was the thinking that went into McGregor doing this? Was it just simply that they saw the future and that the future was licensing varieties, or was there more to it than that?
It was actually a really organic process. So what I mean by that is we had the variety in testing for the last 2 years. It actually was in the top three in our testing across all locations in 2015. And then it won across all eight of our locations in 2016. The company that actually developed the variety was going to walk away from the variety and not advance it any farther because it has a regional fit. We saw the performance advantage for our growers and had a very hard time walking away from that performance and pursued the company to let us carry it forward.
There's a natural tension between yield and quality. Where do you come down on that dichotomy?
Sure. So in the P&W, it is pretty interesting. We have to be aware of quality. We market a quality product. And if we lose focus on that, we will lose the edge that our growers have because of that quality aspect. From a retailer side, or how we promote, say, plant nutrition, we always look at the quality aspect. So we think of how can we increase ROI on that farm. And if we let quality go by the wayside, we're not increasing ROI on that acre. So it is that combination between yield and quality. I'm very happy that the breeding programs in the P&W understand that as well as I think they do. I think that's a great fit that the university brings to this region, is I think they help the private industry understand that that has to be a very major breeding target for them. And as a result, we have, I would argue, pretty few varieties released that don't have adequate milling quality and induced quality.
And Empress, the variety that you are licensing, where does that fall in quality?
Sure. It's been tested primarily against Westbred 528 and SY Ovation as its standards, and has been deemed right in between those two lines in every parameter for quality. I think, is it OSU or WSU puts out their end-use quality? It should be adequate at a bare minimum.
So Lois was referring to the Pacific Northwest Preferred Variety Brochure, which the Washington Grain Commission and the Oregon and Idaho Wheat Commissions publish annually. The Agricultural Research Service's Western Wheat Quality Lab in Pullman evaluates all released varieties and assigns each a score based on 3 years of data. The 2017 quality brochure is available on the WGC website. You might have heard Solois use the term ROI several times. For those even less financially inclined than myself, it stands for return on investment, and it may be what separates private research from public research. I'm hard-pressed to think of a single university researcher who uses the term, and Solois must have said it a dozen times during our conversation. I ask her whether the emphasis was a legacy of her work at DuPont Pioneer.
A little bit, but probably more so being focused on the retail side. So what do I mean by that? When I think research kind of does come from two schools of thought. There's researchers that are really in the field aspect trying to save growers money. And there's researchers that are on the side of trying to make growers money. So being in a production system where we are trying to actively help growers make money and profit on every acre, that's why I'm concerned with ROI versus necessarily what exactly works and doesn't work, or is it, quote, saving money. I'm in the business of making my growers money.
That raises the question for me, chemicals and weed resistance. You know, it just seems like an enormous problem that is going to overwhelm us unless we come up with some solutions.
We were just talking about that this morning. How do we get proper training not only to our account managers but to our growers that if we aren't very careful about the modes of action we have, the sites of action we have, rotating our chemistries across our crop rotation, maybe in spite of ROI. So what do I mean by that? Say a two-year rotation can be incredibly profitable, but we end up burning those actives out very quickly. So how can we have that discussion with our growers to stretch to a 3-year, to stretch to a 4-year, to help walk through all those rotational options on what type of diversity and modes of action that extended rotation can bring to help us around those resistant management questions. Another huge value that we have is we work pretty darn closely with the weed scientists at Wazoo. I think they're outstanding. They do some really incredible research, especially with the resources they have. They are very grower focused, but more helpful for us is they are in every way helpful to the retailers as well. So they understand that the grower needs that education in every direction we can get, and they're right involved in that retail arena as well.
I talk to those weed scientists too, and they feel that the direct seeders might have to do a little tillage from time to time. The direct seeders, meanwhile, say, hell no. Where do you come down on this?
We've been looking at how we could integrate some form of tillage or soil disturbance on a rotational basis. This company, Steve Reinertsen, my predecessor, has been instrumental in a direct seed, a two-pass type system. There is no doubt that it helps soil erosion, water management, soil health, especially in the topography that we live in. But when we start pulling an entire tool out of our toolbox and start relying so heavily on those chemical modes of action, we are taking essentially a huge mode of action in the form of iron away. Is it once every 3 years, once every 5 years, once every 6 years, somewhere in that option? Very well could be. They're doing quite a bit of work on Cook Farm with those longer rotations. So how can we strike that balance between maintaining the conservation practices and soil health we've worked so hard to build, but not losing our chemical modes of action in the course of 3 years?
Should everyone who is spraying have tank mixes? Should there not be any one chemical spray anymore?
You could argue that that should be the case. What we need to be aware of, even from a resistance management standpoint, is trying to ensure in the PNW with our unique growing conditions, so off-season rain, low rainfall, long winters, high parallels as far as our northern exposure, that we have at least two modes of action in the tank that have efficacy on our target weed. So what do I mean by that? Usually, if we have some efficacy on one mode of action, we might need another to completely eliminate that pest. So go from an 85% control to a 99% control. I kind of chuckle when I have companies come to me and they have, no, we have a standalone product. It hasn't happened in some time where we don't need at least two modes of action for that target weed species. I guess on that tank mixes, something that we're working on and just trying to see what kind of efficacy there is, when you think about your broadleaf herbicides and your grassy herbicides, the typical tendency is to tank mix all of those into one arena, into one application, and sometimes we don't get the timing right on either one. So that's what we're looking at, is could we separate, say, our broadleaf and our grassy herbicides and actually do a better job of both to help some of those resistant management issues.
What was the biggest hurdle for you coming from being a soybean breeder to being director of research at MacGregor's?
Probably the chemistry side. So if we think about where the majority of soybeans lie, it's in a Roundup Ready system at a bare minimum. So coming back to where that isn't an option and the chemistries are completely different. Fortunately, I would argue I have probably one of the best research agronomists in the PNW in my back pocket with Bruce Palmer. He has been boots on the ground for the company for 38 years. He's been in R&D for 25 years. The man is a walking encyclopedia when it comes to crop protection and chemistries. So for that reason, we make a very powerful team that I understand biotechnology, genetics, plant physiology, plant nutrition, that aspect. And he has been there, done that, seen how it works, remembers how it works, has seen all those chemistries come to market, is incredibly detail-oriented when it comes to, say, residual plant backs and rotation and understanding that through the market type delivery system. So we have very different knowledge bases and make a great team.
Darn, that's all the time we have this week. I swear, some of these podcasts could be twice as long. Hope you enjoyed episode 32, or what I'm calling The Cat That Came Back, about Kat Solois, Director of Research and Technology at the MacGregor Company. There's some pictures of Solois on the WGC Facebook page, as well as a photograph I took of a document that appears under glass in the lobby of the MacGregor's headquarters. It includes photographs of the handsome Scottish family and a bit of history about the brothers arriving in Whitman County in 1882, looking for a good place to raise sheep. That was the beginning of what has become not just a company, but a Pacific Northwest institution. Hope you enjoyed the show and will join me again next time for another episode of We Know About It!
Don't like chemicals, don't like killing. Look in your kitchen, the story there's chilling. Plant food, Windex, mouse bait too. Mr. Clean, easy off, even pet shampoo. You wanna be a hypocrite? Just forget to have the shit. We feed you.